apostrophe. I-T-W-I-T. H-T-A-N-N-Y. And J-E-N-N-Y. Doing it with Danny and Jenny.
So for me, like every week, I like to praise the great work of Eli Braden. But for this week, all I'm thinking about is truly one of my comedy heroes, somebody I, you know, have was an inspiration to pretty much everybody from my generation who does comedy for a living. And so yeah. All I was thinking about was, oh, God, is this song good enough for this guy? That's how I felt. No offense, Eli. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no offense. I felt the same way. I was like, should we even play it?
I know. Nervous. I feel like we're just pieces of shit, and then we're going to have
We
this.
Are.
I mean, we just don't. We're, you know what? No, let's start over. Because not really. Over. Not legitimately. That was gold, what we just did.
That was.
but God, Jenny, you want to? I mean, I'm going to chime in on this introduction, but you go.
Yeah, no, go for it. Go for it.
Okay, so I'm it's a long windup, but. I didn't do that much with my dad wasn't around a lot, but we one time as a family in 1980, it's like, well, let's have a movie night. And we went to see a movie and together. And it was, which was very rare. And it was one of those situations where I was even kind of bummed out because I had a family of five and we could only get four seats together. And so my dad in classic Doug Zucker tradition said, you're old enough. You go sit by yourself. So I had to sit by myself through this movie and I didn't know what it was. And it was, Airplane. And I can think of no movie that I've watched more than Airplane. And I went to school that day and I talked about it and it changed my life. And we'll talk more about it. And one of the three great minds behind that movie is with us and many others, comedy legend, David Zucker.
Give
her a
round of applause.
Is this my introduction? Can I talk?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay. That was a very nice introduction. Thank you very much. Although I don't think your theme song is good enough.
I knew you didn't. I could tell. I could tell.
I agree with you. This isn't video, is it? This is just audio.
Just audio. I mean, we'll put some clips on there. So you know, try and keep your fingers out of your nose. As much as possible.
That's right. That's what I
did. Or make it like the jerk off motion when one of us is talking. That typically happens a lot.
Yeah. I do use that on occasion.
Thank you so much for doing this. You're the second Zucker brother I've met. I got to meet your brother several years ago when he was doing that National Banana website thing. Oh, I wound up doing a little thing with him and it was just a rare pleasure. So thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, sure. We still speak.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah. No, Jerry and Jim and I are still very close, as you might imagine. Maybe you don't imagine.
But, yeah. Jim Abrams and your
brother. And we're actually writing a book together right now. It's called Surely You Can't Be Serious. And it's all about how we went from Milwaukee in 1971. And, you know, 8 years later, we did Airplane. And it's the whole story, which people don't really know the story behind it. And it's quite
what I'm actually fascinated by. When is this book supposed to come out?
Well, we're formatting it now so that we can give it to an agent and then we'll take it out to publishers. And then, you know, they say it takes like 8 months or something. I don't know why. The book is done. We wanted to do this book. So they said, okay, you got to do a book proposal. So we couldn't do a book proposal or a sample chapter or any of that stuff. So we just went ahead and wrote the book.
I've done that with pilot pitches before. Yeah. Where it's like I can't, let me just write it. And then
just write it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so much easier. So I get it.
And this book is full of pictures so that, you know, it'll be easy for you to read, Danny.
Thank you. Thank you. And no big words, I hope, right?
Nah, but there really aren't, yeah. I mean, pretty much, it's a lot. We have I kept everything from the whole 10 years.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, the entire, every review, everything we did, because I'm kind of the historian of the bunch. In fact, I just wrote a book about my family history. And yeah. it's called Before the Invention of Smiling, and it's available on Amazon. So I might as well plug that.
We're going to link that.
Absolutely. Before
the Invention of Smiling, that's being linked in the description of this podcast. Right. I do find that a lot of the comedy that was so breakthrough for me was like, it was always a little bit outside. You know, I grew up on the East Coast, so which was not, you know, but it was like the comedy that was coming from Canada with the SCTV guys, or for me, even like Monty Python prior to that. And you're from the Midwest, which was like, you know, not my, how do you get from that? I know you had the Kentucky, take me from the Kentucky, starting of the Kentucky Fried Theater to Airplane. I'm really curious.
It's really what the book is about, is how we came from, I mean, it's really the middle of nowhere. Although Milwaukee has a sizable Jewish community, which is nice. So it's always an indicator of a big city. So, but you know, so it was like, we weren't New York or even Chicago, or certainly not LA. And Milwaukee was a place where things came to. So we watched all these shows, and a lot of the serious shows, I mean, what can we do but make fun of it? And so that's really how our comic attitude kind of got started. And also my dad was actually a big part of it, because he didn't know how to tell a joke, but he did have great sense of humor. And he would say the most hilarious things, but, you know, totally straight face, just deadpan. And that really, I think, was the origin of the whole Leslie Nielsen, Robert Stack thing.
Yeah.
Is just saying things, and you don't have to be a comedian. And well, then, yeah.
Brilliance of what you did. No one winked. You even cast people who were not, I mean, it's funny, people younger than myself don't even know that Leslie Nielsen was a serious actor for the better part of his career prior to you.
I know. You know, and I've also, we've had people as a guest here at the house. And so one guy, we said, how do you take your coffee? And he said, I take it black like my women. And so I corrected him. I said, no, it's like my men. And he looked at me, what? He had never seen Airplane. A guy in his dorm when he was in college said this line. And, you know, it's like pass a secret. It became a different line, but it's people don't even know what it's from, you know, or maybe, yeah, maybe also surely you can't be serious. That could be also.
That was something like growing up for me. I mean, Danny told this story, but I'm 43, and like my parents were like 40 years older than me when they had kids. So my dad just kind of caught my silly sense of humor, and he was a chemical engineer, and he would have to work like overnight shifts, and he would wake me up in the middle of the night, not wake my sister up because she wouldn't get it, but he'd go, come in here. Now this is Airplane. This
oh,
is
really? What
this, yeah. And he said, and this is Leslie Nielsen. He used to be a serious actor. Now he told me like he would love that I was doing this. He's no longer with us, but
it needs to be explained to you youngsters, really.
Yeah. Well, it was like embedded in me from day one. I mean, and the reason like I'm a comedy writer and do stand up, like Airplane, anytime somebody favorite movie all time, it's Airplane. Like I can watch Airplane to this day and I'll still catch something new. Like just, it wasn't even that, like the mayonnaise jars at the Mayo Clinic, you know, like sometimes you're following the bouncing heart, but you're missing that there's jars of mayonnaise.
That they see new things.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have never seen the, you know, when the plane crashes through the window of the terminal,
right.
A lady is running and throws her baby up in the air.
Yes.
You know, and then, and you know, I'll tell you, even I noticed things that I didn't notice before.
Really?
Yeah, because we were doing an interview for a radio station about a week ago, and everybody, Jim and Jerry and Bob Hayes was on it, and other people. Oh, and Lorna Patterson, who played one of the stewardesses.
Yeah. Yes.
And they were playing the jive scene, which was somebody's favorite scene, the jive dudes. And so they're they're talking, and then it's when June Cleaver is translating for them.
Oh, yeah, she speaks jive.
And the stewardess is saying, tell them that we're going to land in an hour, that everything's going to be okay. And then, but it struck me that the black dudes aren't even realizing they can't understand English. So she has to say it right in front of them. Tell them this A, B, and C. Anyways, I never thought of that before.
Yeah, it was all just so.
It was just all done so seriously, and I never thought about that part too. They can't even communicate in regular English. Oh, show.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, I have to show that, David. I had this made for my house, and I had to take it down to show you that it hangs above my desk.
Oh, wow, that's a big Lloyd Bridges.
I had it. I found it like on the internet, and then had it like blown up to proper pixelation and framed, and I keep that above my desk.
Poses in front of the picture of himself.
Of him in the same pose.
Yeah. And I also have Leslie Nielsen from Naked Gun hanging in my hallway.
But when we were growing up, you know, we were fans of the Marx Brothers, and you know, we also like a little bit of the Three Stooges, but what really made us laugh were serious movies. And you know, they were so deadly serious that, and there may have been some weed involved somewhere. But we would laugh hysterically at all this, at the serious stuff. And so then when one night we discovered Zero Hour, this 1957 movie starring Dana Andrews, then we thought that was an epiphany, I think, just saying, why don't we remake this movie, but not with comedians, but just like we would redub it, and maybe the Robert Stacks and Leslie Nielsen's wouldn't know that they're in a comedy and do it straight. And that became the whole idea for Airplane.
Wow. And were you, like, when you're going through this process, because it was unlike any movie, like, you know, look, Mel Brooks was doing like broader parodies of films, and I love them, but the style, the density of yours, like the rat-a-tat-tat, like a joke, you didn't go 5 seconds without that joke. What was that like selling that to the studio? I mean, did they get it? Did like, when you were making it, I was curious.
Well, every studio turned it down.
Really?
Except one. I mean, and what I learned was it only takes one, and it was really just one guy, and his name was Michael Eisner, and at the time he was the president of Paramount Studios. We pitched it, and you know, people liked us, and some people didn't get the idea, and maybe they read the script, always a mistake, but they, you know, but it was rejected by every studio. And Eisner heard about it, and I think he just heard comedy on an airplane, and maybe he thought it was Animal House on an airplane. Right. But in any case, you know, he heard about it at a dinner, reportedly, and he excused himself from the table, and it was in a restaurant. And in those days, you know, you got up and called at a payphone.
Yep.
And he called Jeff Katzenberg, who was his second in command, and said, I want you to tell me on Monday that we own this script. That's what he said.
Wow.
So we're in. So we get the call over the weekend, and or on Monday, and then maybe that Tuesday or something, we were in Eisner's office.
Wow.
And, you know, talking about the script, and they didn't officially buy it right away because they didn't want us to direct it. So there was a long time where we were doing a rewrite for them. And I'm telling you, this studio, it only improved the script. It's like, it's not the usual story of the studio ruins it. This was, you know, it was Eisner, Katzenberg, Barry Diller, and they signed a guy named Tom Perry to go over the script with us. He was the story guy. And then they didn't want us to direct it because we were first-time directors, and then we insisted on three of us directing at once. So that was an automatic no. But we held out. And finally, they relented, and they assigned to us this old line Hollywood producer, former director, former head of the Motion Picture Academy, Howard W. Koch. And he was going to be the godfather of the production and to be Paramount's man on our set. Turned out he was our man at Paramount, and it was just another miracle. I mean, only miracles happened all through Airplane, that, you know, that was done at all, that it was done the way that we wanted. And, you know, I mean, we originally had cast Pete Rose in the part, and it would have been a quarter as good.
And Pete Rose for the...
Yeah, for the Kareem
part. Oh,
no, for the Kareem part. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. For the Kareem part. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, and but he was doing baseball at the time, and so we got Kareem, and so then we were able to add all those great lines.
Oh my God, I hustled back on that court, the whole thing, and then when he just and the, just a little the moment where you pull him when he's being pulled out of the cockpit, and we
right.
And the
shorts on, yeah.
And the goggles.
Oh my God, sublime! Just
Well, it's because we, you know, somehow we knew not to point out the jokes to the audience, not to cut to them, and that makes all the difference. And we did discover that that was how to do comedy, and you know, not to, you know, to let force the audience to meet us halfway, and so. Yeah. There's a lot of jokes where it's just there in the frame. Like when there's some turbulence and just Bob Hayes is fighting to control the plane. Yeah. And we cut back to the passenger cabin and Leslie Nielsen looks up and says, what the hell's going on up there? And then got the stirrups, the woman is in the stirrups, and he's got a speculum. And it's just like, we don't cut to it. That's what's funny about it.
It's so great.
Yeah.
It's the best part of it. It's just like that complete absurdity. I do remember this moment with my own kids where I was like, I couldn't, like, they're old enough. I'm showing them Airplane. It's time to educate them. And yeah. I just forgotten a couple things like with my daughters. It was like, and it was the line where Julie says to Robert Hayes, it's like, remember how I used to sit on your face and wriggle? And my little daughter is sitting next to me. You know, I'm going to give this one more year. And then I remembered it. And there's a moment in the turbulence when the boobies come out. And shaking, you know, the gratuitous bouncing boobies.
That was my son's favorite part, where I showed it to him when he was two. After that, we would just watch softcore porn together. You know, he
beautiful.
He
saw it as food, you know. Yes.
Well, my dad showed that to me when I was like 6 years old, maybe five or six. So yeah. Like, I just like, I knew it was funny, whatever, but I'm divorced now. But when I was married, my stepson, I showed him Airplane and he was probably like 11.
Yeah.
And I was in the other room and he's watching it. And I knew exactly, I could hear what part it was. And I knew it was the titty part.
The
I knew it. And all of a sudden it was like, rewind.
Oh yeah.
rewind. I let it go like five times. And I was like, all right, buddy, let's just go ahead and call it on the fifth one. I know what you're doing.
I want to see how they lit it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in those days, the movie was PG. I mean, we had language, we had some drug humor, you know, all this stuff. It probably would have been R-rated today.
Yeah.
The old lady doing cocaine. That was one of my favorite parts.
Okay, so I'm going to move. There's so much I want to cover with you. I'm going to hit everything.
Yeah.
But so I want, tell me, I'm going to go to this first. The next movie was Top Secret, which to me is pound for pound one of the funniest movies ever made. I find that, I'm going to just tell you, a joke I refer to all the time, and it is the smartest fucking joke, is when Val Kilmer is being tortured in that German prison, passes out, and is in high school, and has missed the test. Yeah. And it's like, you missed the test. And then he wakes up while being whipped and says, thank God.
While being tortured by the Nazis. He says, thank God. Yeah.
That is the most sublime fucking joke in the world. And I bring that joke up more than a fair share. What was that experience like? Because I know that wasn't as, I know that wasn't as big a hit in the time as Airplane was, but.
We just had a blast. We went to England. We shot it in London at Pinewood Studios.
Wow.
And that was just fun, you know, just living for a year in England. And, it was great fun. And the cast was wonderful.
terrific. The song was great.
It was disappointing that it didn't perform like Airplane, but you know, we figured out why, and it was, I mean, it was really our own fault because we didn't. What happened was that we took the wrong lessons from Airplane. And that was that, well, you fill a movie with, you know, 85 minutes of jokes and away we go. It's great. But Airplane had a great story, but it wasn't something that we created. It was Arthur Haley who wrote right. 0 Hour. So we just, put the jokes in. And then in Top Secret, it was our own story. And we really didn't give Val a character arc and a clear first, second, and third act. So and that's what happens. And in movies, we learn. That's a, you know, my dad said you never learned a lesson that didn't cost him money.
Yeah, to me,
and Val Kilmer was great in that too.
Oh, he was fabulous. Yeah, Val was.
I'm surprised he didn't do more comedy after
that. He did. Really. He did do some more comedy. He did
some, but it wasn't like the way that Leslie Nielsen kind of.
He was always a dramatic actor. And,
But I always thought like that because I can partially see that. I think what the difference was, I mean, the disaster movie or the Airplane type movie, like Airports, all those things, was a very clear thing you were parodying in that moment, or you know, it was a very clear thing. Right. And this one was like Elvis movie, but it was also East German. So it was like
Nazis. I mean, it wasn't grounded in reality. That's probably another piece of the puzzle.
But that said, I think part of why I'm so drawn to that movie. It's there is such absurdity, but beautiful absurdity in that later.
I know it really had the best jokes we've ever done.
It's one of my favorites.
I think I'm in high school at this point still, but Police Squad comes on TV.
Right.
I used to hear people complaining about like a show going off the air. And go, it's just a TV show. It's just, you know, it's like this. When there was no more after the sixth episode, me, my friends, everyone I knew who was a comedy nerd, the thing, like, what the fuck? Like, how is this? This is the best comedy I've ever seen on television. I, in preparation for this, just watched them all again for the fifth time. I actually showed my son.
Yeah.
Because that's like, while I'm doing your greatest hits, my favorite joke was when he's breaks into that place, they go, who are you? How did you get in here? And he says, I'm a locksmith. But
it wasn't right for television. Television needs a kind of a family. I mean, the greatest television shows, from Mary Tyler Moore to MASH and, Seinfeld, all those great shows had a kind of a family. They were, maybe they weren't an official family, but it wasn't spoof satire. This was pure spoof. And the other thing is people watch television differently than they watch movies, and we create movies or TV where you have to absolutely pay attention. And so, and we went to some of the Police Squad shows with some family groups and other groups, and we realized people were, you know, they would talk to each other and they would answer the phone, and it was a lot of distractions. And so remember, we were going, wait a minute, you missed the next two jokes. And so they watch things differently on a big screen. In a movie, you can see details.
That's true.
You can't on a small screen. So, and what happened was, you know, we wanted to do Police Squad as a movie because it was based on a TV show starring Lee Marvin, which was called M Squad. If you're not familiar with that, you could check that out on YouTube. Yeah. It's the same setup. It looks the same. Yeah. That was our 0 hour, but we didn't know how to make it into an entire plot. These were 27 minute episodes, so that's why. And Eisner said, "I can get you 6 on the air at ABC." So we said yes. Yeah.
Wow, so good. And that boy, what it led to, in the Gun movies is just.
Yeah, and then of course, yeah, it's the first hit TV, hit movie franchise based on a failed TV series. So
yeah, it would be like a cop-out. Really?
I never even thought about that.
Like, we could do that because we always loved that, or I always loved Police Squad, and I wanted to do it as a movie. And
Police Squad was.
I insisted, and that was about the time when Jerry and Jim and I kind of went our separate ways, and Jerry did Ghost, and I did Naked Gun 1, and Jim did Big Business, I think. And then he went on to do the Hot Shots movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, but I mean.
And Naked Gun, I mean, I have to say, like, that, it goes Airplane Naked Gun for me as far as like favorite comedies. And I'm giving Airplane the nod because it came first. But Naked Gun, David, I'm here to tell you, I have like one of my best friends that I grew up with, Leslie, if she's listening, hi. To this day, it doesn't matter how old we were, we would see each other, and whoever saw the person first had to shout, "Nice beaver," across a crowded room, and then the other person had to say, "Thanks, just had it stuffed." You brought so much entertainment to Bay City, Texas. I'm here to tell you, like, at every party we went to. Yeah, you should, like, all of our parents would just go, "Oh boy, here we go. These kids are going to get together." Like, I can't tell you how much... And I grew up next to a nuclear power plant, so of course those two, everywhere I look, something reminds me of.
Oh yeah.
Couldn't drive past that without saying it. Like, how many times, like, do people like myself? Because I'm just so thrilled about having you on. Like, repeat lines to you. Like, do people just do this?
We've done it 10 times. I've just got really self-conscious myself.
I know. Yeah, I'm trying not to do it, but it's so hard.
It happens all the time. I don't mind. I just like any attention that I can get.
You know? Well, you came to the right podcast.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Now, I saw you, David. You did a, I think it was you and Pat Prof did a thing through Flapper's Comedy. And I do a lot of stand up with.
Was that Flapper's. The one in Pasadena or?
It was a Zoom one. It was a thing.
What was the Zoom one? That's right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I was getting the biggest kick out of just hearing the two of you shoot the shit and talk about the movie. And I know the guy that was like moderating, he shows a picture, an old picture of the two of you and O.J. Simpson.
Oh yeah.
On this set, and the guy, like, I don't know who it was hosting, and he goes, "Now what were you all talking about?" And you just, without missing a beat, said, "Oh, we were talking about the knife set that I had just given him for Christmas."
my collection.
And I had to mute myself so hard. I laughed so fucking hard. I was on the ground laughing.
I get asked that question. And sometimes I say about that, there's that picture of us, all right?
Yeah.
Sometimes I say, well, I'm explaining to him why it's bad to kill people.
I loved it. That was right up my alley. I laughed so hard.
I worked on a show when I first came out here with the actual Nordberg, or what's his? He said he knew you guys.
There was a guy named Greg Norberg.
It was Greg Norberg, and what I mostly remember is he had lost his thumb.
Yeah,
and his big toe put where the thumb was.
Yeah, it makes me cringe even to hear about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I remember hearing that he was Greg Norberg. Yeah,
no, he's another buddy of Prof's. And, you know, and yeah, Mike McManus, there's a whole Minnesota crowd. But, you know, the thing about Proft is that, I mean, all the Naked Guns, he was so good at writing all those Leslie Nielsen lines, those great lines, like a midget at a urinal I had to keep on my toes or something like that. Those are all, and so when Leslie dies, then all the papers printed all his great lines. I mean, as if he made them up himself.
Like he's Eleanor Roosevelt, and he just hit.
Yeah, they were all Pat Prof lines. So, yeah.
You know, he had that like sort of Raymond Chandler, like that film noir voiceover.
Yeah, thing. And that's where, you know, we got the idea for Police Squad from M Squad, which was itself a television version of film noir.
In
59, which is, and film noir went from like 1949 to the mid 50s, I think.
I always want to get confirmation from one of you guys on this, because just before Naked Gun movie came out, I was got my first writing gig, which was on the Arsenio Hall show, and Raquel Welch was a guest on it.
Oh, yeah.
And no, I'm sorry. Bo Derek was the guest on it. I apologize, not Raquel Welch. Bo Derek was the guest. And Arsenio's just asking her randomly about like any movies like you would turn down or things you don't want to do. And like, what's the craziest thing they asked you to do in a movie? And I think she was talking about, did you originally go to Bo Derek before?
Priscilla?
Presley?
Yes, we did. We went to Bo Derek.
The movie came out, she's on there saying, yeah, I mean, they, you know, people say, you know, they just want it. Yeah, there was a scene where I was supposed to wear a giant condom, and it's, I mean,
I thought, I always thought that John Derek came in and quashed the whole thing. It was actually, she didn't get it. Okay.
No, she didn't. That's like, fine. I mean, because you think about Bo Derek, and the first thing you think of is like, great sense of humor, super funny. No, I'm kidding. But
that doesn't matter to us. The more humorless, the better.
Yeah, right. No, it's true. But I don't know. Don't they? I mean, they have to play a deadpan. But isn't it helpful if they get the? Did you who, like? They got the joke, though. I always felt, didn't they? Or no?
I mean, these are the guys who made Airplane. You would think they would.
Often not in the script reading. You know, when we went out to Peter Graves for the pilot.
Yeah.
And he did more than turn it down. He just threw it in the trash. And he said, this is the most disgusting piece of garbage I've ever read. And so, but you have to remember that when actors, years later, I figured that when actors read a script, they only read their own part.
You're right. Right.
He read the script, and he must have appeared to him that he was going to play a pedophile.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, he tells his agent, Platt, no, I ain't doing this, no way. And so, then he got a call from Howard Koch, our Godfather producer. Right. And Howard said, and Howard knew all these guys, knew Stack, Bridges, Wilson, everybody. And he said, listen, Peter, I think you ought to at least meet the boys. That's what they called us. Mm-hmm. And come in and meet. And I think that also his wife and his daughter got it. And they said, Dad, this is okay. You should at least go in and meet. So he comes in and meets. And so, you know, it's always a surprise that, you know, we're not these drug crazed weirdos.
Yeah.
You know, I think we appeared to be, you know, these nice boys from Milwaukee. So, and with Howard saying, listen, Peter, this is okay. Then he signed on. And as they say, you know, he's in for a penny, in for a pound. And he was a trooper on set, did all the stuff. And we had to really direct it because that was the most sensitive scene. I mean, you couldn't just say, Joey, you ever seen Girl Man Naked? I mean, you can't. If you watch the movie, he's going, Joey, have you ever seen a grown man? You know, and he's we directed him to do every single action.
Well, the genius of that also, because I'll just go back to that scene in it too, is don't start out. It's the timing of it, because first he goes, have you ever been in the cockpit before? No. Have you ever seen a grown man naked? He like repeats that cadence. So it's like in a list. Oh, it's
He's trying to sneak it through, I think, and it really worked.
And Joey, the actor who played Joey, was just so blissfully happy to be in a cockpit with his.
Yeah, we cast him because he was the most white bread kid.
Sir, I've never been in a plane before. Like,
yeah, right. Out of any number of those movies or TV shows of the 50s, and they were all named Joey. Yeah,
that was so. So great, Mike.
I have to ask, where did, because one of my favorite characters was Johnny. Where did y'all find Johnny? And that Johnny's no longer with us, but that character I mean, him either.
Yeah,
that's also gonna be this book because Steve Stucker was in our show, Kentucky Fried Theater, which we did on Go for 5 years. And our piano player that we thought was great from Milwaukee didn't come out with us. And so, and when we, some friends in LA suggested that we get Stucker, and we had him in for an audition, and he played the piano, and he was great. Although, you know, as these very, very straight Midwestern boys that we were, you know, we didn't know from gay, and we didn't know what to do with this guy. I mean, in fact, you know, sometimes we tried to, you know, actually physically put his feet together so he wouldn't be in always in a ballet pose. So, and it was like, and so, but we quickly realized that he was turned out to be the star of the show. And when he was on stage, they weren't looking at us. I could have, you know, we could have done anything. And he was the star of the show. And he was, and so that show ran for 5 years in LA. And then when it came time to do Kentucky Fried movie, we put him in that. He was in the courtroom scene in that. And then in Airplane, well, you know, we never wrote for him. We always, what we did was for Airplane, like we had that press conference scene where the reporters are asking questions. And we called Steve on the telephone and read him the straight lines, the questions, and he came back. All those answers are his.
I was going to ask that. So when he's like,
really?
Yeah. Was wow. A brooch or a pterodactyl? Did that come from him?
That was from the show. Yeah. Yeah. That was from a kind of a bar sketch that we did.
Yeah.
Kentucky Fried Theater said, Johnny, what can you make that? What can you make out of this? And he said, you make a brooch or hat.
Pterodactyl.
And it worked every time, and it works in the movie. And also from the our stage show was Passengers Certain to Die, Airline Negligence, and there's a sale at Penny's.
That I also loved it towards the end when he is trying to comfort the wife,
yeah.
And he looks at her dress. He's like, "Where did you get that dress and the shoes?" She's just already sobbing, and just makes her feel more like shit. I was like, "Oh."
And that was also his, I think. That was, I think, yeah, yeah. We probably read him the scene over the phone again. He came and up so.
And he came up with the plane looked like a big Tylenol.
Yeah, absolutely. It was all.
Wow.
Yeah. No, we couldn't. In our wildest imaginations, we couldn't think of that stuff.
That's shocking because in your wildest imaginations, you came up with airplanes.
I know, it's true. And we're amazingly talented. I mean, yeah.
You are.
I mean, you realize this.
I don't know if we've not said that enough, but yeah.
I'm like, obviously. Yeah,
I think every 5 minutes you need to kind of renew it.
I have your rider right here. I'm sorry.
I have framed pictures of your work in my home. So.
That's really sick. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, thank you. Yes. So let's see. So after Naked Gun, you did 2.5, 33 and a third. And then how did you get into the scary movie?
Oh.
Was that the Wayans Brothers?
I had done Basketball, which flopped. It became a cult hit. My fault. Flops became, yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you do a flop, then you're in director's jail. It's like 14 months or something. And so, and I got my partner, Gil Netter at the time, got a hold of a script in our office, and it was for an Ashton Kutcher movie, and I did that. And that was almost unreleasable. and then Bob Weinstein was the one who, he was the studio head. And so he said in his own way, Zucker, you're a better director than your material. So he liked me, so that was good. So then when it came time to do Scary Movie 3, I guess he couldn't come to a deal with the Wayans.
So he
called me. And he said, how would you like to do Scary Movie 3? And I said, sure, where's the script? And he said, well, there is no script, but it's a spoof on Signs and The Ring. And I pretended that I had seen or even heard of those movies because I don't go to see movies. so I said, sure. And so I recruited Pat Proft and Craig Mazin. Craig Mazin.
I love Craig. Yeah. At the time. He's a buddy of mine.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's wonderful. And so we did Scary Movie 3, which is an entire book movie in itself.
Yeah.
How we, you know, we call that one Apollo 13 because we were around the moon and then we couldn't, it kind of blew up. We couldn't get back because we... Weinstein, who I love. I mean, Bob's a great guy, but he ordered all these rewrites. He ordered us, he stopped shooting for 2 weeks. Wow. We had to fly back from Vancouver and see the Matrix 2. And he said, now for the second act, you're going to make it Matrix 2. And so it made no sense, but we did it. And we, you know, we rewrote for 2 weeks, shot for a week with Queen Latifah and Eddie Griffin, and none of it worked. It wasn't their fault, but it was a disaster. And so then we reshot for 2 weeks. And, you know, Craig Mazin did a brilliant job. And Pat Proft helped, of course, you know, cob together from spare parts the script. And we reshot for 2 weeks with Kevin Hart. Because that was his first movie.
Really?
Yeah, wow. We discovered him. He came in to help out on a table read. And we thought, hey, this guy's funny, you know, Anthony Anderson. And we put those guys together. And again, Mazin wrote their dialogue. And that really worked. So, and then that became really a wonderful movie. It was really good.
Yeah, fantastic.
So it got me out of jail. I mean, that was nice.
Yeah, that's what you need. You just need that one thing. You're out. You're out and then you're back in. I mean... God, there's so much I want to go over. I got to work with Leslie Nielsen on a sitcom, Evening Shady, came in to do, and I'm working with Burt Reynolds, but like I still have the little fart machine.
His handheld fart machine.
Yeah, he would do that. He'd do that on the set and on press tours. We were on an elevator in Charlotte once on a press tour, and people coming up to him saying, "Oh, Mr. Nielsen, I'm a big fan," and then he'd say, "Thank you very much. I'm..." And then people would be like shocked and try to get off the elevator.
I saw him do it on many a late night talk show too, promoting things. He had just with it in his hand and just would casually.
Because clearly Leslie was always funny.
He's a closet comedian, but he was cast in all these serious straight roles. I mean, nobody quite.
You talk about being out of jail. Did he feel like he was getting out of jail with you guys?
Yes, he actually did. I mean, he felt a tremendous, release from, having to labor in the salt mines for 20 years. And, but that, he was good at that. He's a very, very talented, dramatic actor. And, he got to a certain level and he was in, I think he was up to, he did a couple of features. And, but I don't think he was much more suited for episodic TV, of which he did hundreds of, and that's how he made a living.
And also George Kennedy. I mean,
George Kennedy, he was our first choice.
But watching these two guys in Naked Gun, I mean, that's not who you would think would be hitting with these.
Right. Games. Well, we wanted George Kennedy to play the Lloyd Bridges role actually in Air, because he was a bigger star, but Universal said absolutely not. And then we cast, tried out like three other actors before Leslie for the doctor part. It was the last role
we
cast. And Leslie, I mean, one of them was Jack Webb. And there were other guys, it was Ephraim Zimbalist, the other actors who were more well known at the time. And then we thought, well, there was this guy who was the captain of the Poseidon Adventure. And mainly known for going, "Oh my God," when the wave comes. I don't think we knew his name. We said that guy who was in the Poseidon Adventure and in Swamp Fox, a Disney television series. And so we thought this guy would be perfect. He's so humorless. And there was not one speck of humor in anything he's done. So we went to our casting director at Paramount, who was by that time about to tear his hair out because his name was going to go on a comedy. And so far he had Robert Stack Lloyd Bridges, and and he said, oh my God, Leslie Nielsen. Leslie Nielsen's the guy you cast the night before. And we were already like 3 weeks away from shooting. And so we said, no, we want Leslie. We want this guy. He's going to be great. He came in. He read the script. He said to his agent, don't tell them this, but I paid them to do this movie. He totally got it.
Wow.
Well, I will just say, going back, I'm sorry, but it's one of the great character introductions in all of cinema. Is like, is there a doctor on the plane and somebody goes, Miss, I think this gentleman's a doctor, and he's just sitting there with a stethoscope in his ears.
Yeah. And I should point out, you know, if it's Chevy Chase or Bill Murray, they're clown. He's clown.
Yeah.
But if it's Leslie Nielsen, there's nowhere you can go, but that's a great joke. Yeah. So, and I'm not to take anything away from all these great comedians, but a lot of those jokes, and they're stupid, they're dumb jokes. Like, I am serious and don't call me Shirley. This is a stupid pun, but it works because you have these really, gravitas actors doing it, and they're not comedians.
Yeah, and it really, I don't know. It's, I just, you know, I want to thank you so much just for your work. Really. You know, I've had like, I can't tell you how much time I've spent in comedy rooms with my writers and my dear friends.
How many times Danny and I have just sat and watched.
And I mean, it's been hours, days, months of joy. And I mean, and for me just personally, like when I first saw Kentucky Fried Movie, somebody showed it to me when I was in a summer camp and like your names came up and my name is just one letter off from you. It's like Mom Z.
That's right. You're so close. But yeah,
so close. And it was like, God damn it. Why did they leave that off at Ellis Island?
But do you pronounce your name Zucker?
I do, because otherwise I would do it. Half my family pronounces it Zucker also, but I found like whenever I started doing stand-up when I was younger and I would do it. If I didn't say Zucker, they'd spell it your way. And they still mostly spell it.
Right. The natural, when people see my name, they say Zucker. So, Zucker. Yeah. I mean, forever, my life. Yeah. And so that's why I want to do a third book, which is just about my life and all my crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And the title is going to be, it's pronounced Zucker, not Zucker.
Yeah, I was going to call my production company Zucker No C. So I was like, we're on the same page.
Zucker No C.
And for years I had gotten to hear, like, I when I worked with your brother Jerry, he said the nicest thing to me, which was that because I told him, I said, from the moment I came to town, everybody asked if I was like related to you because I'm in comedy. I'm like, that's my last name. And I said, no. And Jerry said, I just want to tell you, he mentioned an event. And he's like, I was at an event and somebody asked me if I was related to you. And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, I don't know, nice. And so don't disabuse me of this. Cause I feast on it for years.
Because of course he was lying.
Yeah, of course.
That's what I was gonna say. I don't want to pop the bubble. That's just manners. That's just Midwest manners.
He's so polite, my brother. Wonderful guy. Yeah.
This has been such a treat, and also I have to just sidebar that the automatic pilot has forever been a longstanding thing in my family, the blow-up automatic. We were a family that grew up on the water. We had a sailboat, and every time the automatic pilot, I'm like, Dad, this is so disappointing that this blow-up guy isn't going to be the automatic pilot.
Auto
the automatic pilot.
And that automatic pilot is still, I think, in Jerry's garage somewhere.
That should be in the Smithsonian. That is a shame.
Yeah. Instead of, it's like flaking the paint, but you know what? He probably floats on it in his pool. it's actually Mrs. Pilot, because they repainted there were two regular pilots. One that was mechanically this, or, you know, could have the spinning head, and they repainted one to be Mrs. Pilot. And I can't believe that the other one, they both weren't saved, but you know, nobody knew that this would become kind of worthy of anything. Yeah,
well,
I can't believe those aren't just sold by the just barrel at, you know, in Palm Springs at pool parties, just the automatic pilot.
That's right. Or at, porn stores or something. You know?
Well, that too.
Yeah.
you know, we'll do it quickly because I don't want to. I'm just curious. We at the end of every podcast, we sort of ask, like, what's the stuff you've been watching? Like, certainly whether it's during the pandemic, what's any show you've been streaming, comedy you like, drama, whatever.
I watch, you know, mostly serious stuff. I mean, I've been watching The Crown, and, you know, the serious stuff I watched before that was like Mad Men and The Sopranos, Entourage. I love those shows. Wow. And but comedy, you know, there's no comedy in movies anymore.
No, it's terrible.
It's terrible. Well, there's nothing. Yeah. But when there was, I remember seeing a movie called Bad Grandpa, which I thought was genuinely funny.
Yeah.
And Bridesmaids, I thought was great. I remember laughing at those. And as far as what makes me laugh today, it's really one thing. It's on True TV. And it's called Impractical Jokers.
I love that.
That is the funniest thing. You can see clips of it on YouTube.
Yeah.
They are so funny. It's unbelievable. Yeah.
Then if you mentioned Bad Grandpa and Impractical Jokers, that'll leave me. I don't know if I've ever recommended this on the show, but it's Eric Andre did a movie just like this on Netflix called called Bad Trip. And it was that same kind of thing that they did on Bad Grandpa, where it was like where people are not aware they're in America.
Some hidden camera stuff.
Yeah. And it's the best one I've seen of all of them. It's so good. Eric Andre on Netflix. And Tiffany Haddish is in it, and Lil Rel. And it is, it's just great. It's just, I really recommend that. So that'll be my recommendation.
My recommendation, I'm just going to go ahead, because I just, in anticipation of you being on here, I of course watched Airplane, Naked Gun. I just was watching all your hits again. I want to just recommend those. Like, you can watch them on Stars, on Netflix. Like, any of the people who have heard the I take my coffee black and aren't getting it right, watch Airplane. It's on Stars. Watch Naked Gun. You can watch it on Netflix. But I highly recommend. And finding, like, where can you find, like, Files from the Police Squad?
It's not...
Or Police Squad. I saw it on.
I found it on YouTube.
That's what I found it on too. I didn't know.
I'm reluctant to say because it's out there. It's worth watching.
Yeah, let's just add all those links. Or if David, is there a better link that people could watch Police Squad that you know of?
You know, I don't know. I'm not aware of anything.
Oh.
Not aware of very much. It's kind of, yeah.
You heard it. God, what a pleasure. I can't thank you enough. This has been like a real highlight.
Yeah, this has truly been. Thank
good
you.
Fun. So thank much. You.
From the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate it. Like,
thank you for the good questions, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.